welcome to this new edition of Inside Nearshoring. So today we'll be talking with David Gilger of Blue Lake Accelerator. It's an interesting story, interesting person overall. Must be warned, we had a few technical difficulties with this particular interview, but I'm pretty sure you'll still be able to follow everything greatly, and let's get over to it. All right, David, thanks a lot for joining us. I appreciate you taking the time. We look forward to getting into it. So how are you doing? How are things going? You know, where are you right now?
Well, thanks. Thanks for having me. It's great to be with you virtually. As I said, hopefully we can catch up for a pint sometime soon. I am actually right now in beautiful Kyiv in Ukraine, and I should be heading back to London and facing the joys of 2-week quarantine in a couple of weeks.
Gotcha. Hey, so I love that you said beautiful Kyiv, right? So a lot of people don't know a lot about Kyiv, but how about we do this? How about you tell us a bit more about who you are, you know, your background, you know, where you are now, how you got to where you are today, just for those who don't know.
Sure. My career started in the city of London, a very typical kind of finance job, and after 6-7 years of doing it, I decided that I wanted to have some excitement in my life. And as I am originally from Ukraine, I started Vines Consulting, a company aimed at linking up Ukrainian and British or European businesses. This mainly centered around finding amazing companies, undiscovered corporates, you know, your tractor manufacturers in Ukraine that can benefit from foreign investors, and on the other hand, working with foreign corporates, private equity, or family offices types, and helping them to make sense of the insanity that Ukraine is. Then there was Maidan revolution, and if anything, we decided then there was a small team of ours to double down and to put all our efforts into building up those links and opening up Ukraine to foreign investors, corporates, and other participants. About 2-3 years ago, we started to notice one of those secrets that's not really a secret, that Ukraine is pretty damn amazing when it comes to IT. Yeah. So probably many people know Ukraine as one of the powerhouses when it comes to IT development. Lesser known fact is all that talent, all those programmers, it's all have been now translating into a lot of early stage startups. And we started to find ourselves shifting from kind of this from the very traditional industry, your manufacturing, your textiles, towards IT, and then gradually towards startups. We did our first investments a couple of years ago, and while really cool, really interesting, we thought that those companies, those startups, they need something extra. Money is undoubtedly important, and I can talk for ages about the lack of capital in Ukraine and the interest rates that are in 20-25%, and people are wimping about mortgages of 0.25% in the UK or US. But the side of capital, we saw that those budding future tech giants, they need a bit of more hands-on support for many, many reasons. And this is how Blue Lake was born, with the aim and the goal of having this very specialized and very kind of unique structure that finds, identifies, you know, the future Grammarlys, the future GitHubs, and all those other amazing startups at very, very early stages, invests in them, but more than that, actually provides a hands-on support that those guys so desperately in some cases require. And this is where we are right now. We've been operating fully in this manner for the past 12 months. Mm-hmm. Right now, we are fundraising for a new venture capital fund, which is going to be specialized in working with early stage startups in Ukraine and other developing countries. And yeah, this is where we are at the moment, and it's been exciting times. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, with that being said, it seems as though, I mean, you're really on the cutting edge, and you're getting in and speaking to these startups, and you know, who knows, you'll maybe be attached to the next unicorn, right? That's always great to help these startups grow and build. But you must also have an interesting perspective when it comes to innovation and the things that you're seeing. So I'd like to get your take on that. You know, what type of innovations you're seeing, whether it's in the industry itself or just as an accelerator. But before we get into that, what is the significance of Blue Lake, right? Is there a particular reason why it's Blue Lake Accelerator?
Sure. I think most of our listeners will be aware of the blue oceans, but a quick reminder, there's a theory that a successful large enterprise should be seeking ways to offer their services in a manner that doesn't actually compete with the existing market players, but actually creates a new marketplace, and then, you know, happiness all around for customers and for the company that it's first out there. With Blue Lake, we are trying to create a more secure environment, although secure is a very relative term, for those early stage startups to find their feet and then move on into hopefully a blue ocean and become those unicorns that you just mentioned.
Okay, so if that's the case, giving them that security, or as secure as you can be, you know, when you're dealing with startups and things like that.
It's still pretty damn scary, so don't get me wrong. It's never gonna be secure. So I'm using that word really, really hesitantly. Yeah. But we are trying to help to shelter those startups from dumb mistakes, which certainly I made when I started my companies, and help to give them that lending hand when they feel all alone and have this relatively secure area where they can grow and expand.
Gotcha. I mean, it seems as though, and I can relate to a lot of startups that I've worked with in the past, where, you know, they have a great idea of what they want to do, but putting all that together, now that's a completely different thing, and you know, understanding the pitfalls and everything. So I can imagine you're very busy.
I can talk about this for hours. Ideas are almost nothing. I think we, like many other VCs, we can't be bothered with NDAs these days. It's like ideas, fine, your brilliant idea, you know, you're worried about somebody is going to steal it. No, worry about somebody actually managed to execute it. Yeah. It's all about the execution. So ideas are great, but it's getting through that initial phase and not letting that idea die. That's the tricky part.
Yeah. So sometimes I look at it, even when if I look at something from a sales or marketing point of view, you know, often it's who can market it first, right? A lot of companies do the same thing, but then all of a sudden they'll say, well, we use this special piece here that everyone else is using, but they're the first ones to say it.
And nobody cares about who was there first, you know, it's consigned to the history books. It's all about the process, all about the, you know, achieving the results. Actually, a lot of the startups that we work with, there was a very special Eastern European syndrome. It's called, you know, we have these old secret Soviet technologies. So we would have the guys coming to us and say, like, in our university, we have this secret technology that, you know, like Elon Musk rockets will look obsolete. And I was like, well, this stuff is obsolete, but your stuff is on paper flying. So don't worry about the secret technologies. Just get them to the market, and then you'll see the results. But yeah, that's the difference, I guess, in the mentality. One of the things we can talk about later on.
Well, definitely. But you know, you do touch on something interesting. Even with that, you talk about the innovation, right? So let's get back to that. You know, with your position, how you've positioned yourself as an accelerator, and your work with, say, Vimes VC and Vimes Group, and bridging a lot of gaps and making a lot of connections. What have you seen? You know, what type of innovations are you seeing in the industry, and how has that changed? Maybe you saw something a year ago, but now COVID's there and now you're seeing something else. So I'd love to get some insight on that from your perspective.
This is a truly amazing subject. So I think the biggest change that we see is the approach to the innovation itself. And this is the approach on the corporate side of things. So if previously we could look at innovation almost as a kind of a two-tier process. So you will have your large corporate conglomerates, you know, the global names, that they do have their R&D, which is aimed at marginally improving their product that they can roll out, you know, a new and improved and more expensive offering to their customers on B2B or B2C side. And then there was kind of this narrow area where people like Apple and Amazon's place and Google's who are the innovation leaders, and they are almost kind of in the league of their own. Right now, the approach has changed. Most, if not all, large enterprises realize that incremental improvement is not good enough, because the history now is littered with the examples of you are a large world dominating company today and you're gone tomorrow. You know, we all know the Nokias, we all know they are the closed three highest street retailers in the UK. So another iconic name that goes out of business almost on a daily basis. So the approach, the biggest change which we see, funnily enough, it's not on the startup side of things, they're business as usual. It's on the corporate side of things where pretty much all of the large names you can think of on B2B, B2C side, they would have a dedicated innovation department or a corporate startup accelerator with the goal and the aim of finding those ideas, be it internal or external, that will allow for that leap into the future to stay relevant and to stay competitive, to survive in many cases. And if anything, what I think COVID situation has accelerated that approach. Again, so the world is you know, to use the Marvel cliche, the world is changing.
Yeah.
And the people who can adapt the best and thrive in this changing environment, they are the future leaders. So we see a lot of the corporates are now approaching innovation in a very systemic manner, and for a good reason. So one of the things we are focused on at Blue Lake is how can we help our startups to succeed? And this is a very basic idea, but once you start really thinking about it, it's pretty damn complex.
Yeah,
okay, definitely. So funding, yes, we got it. We need to fund them, and we do. And in many cases, we need to fundraise further. Mm-hmm. But what about that small thing called the product and actually selling the stuff to the customers? And in many cases, a lot of the startups, they are aiming at large or medium-sized enterprises. Huh. So when we started with the Blue Lake, we had a pretty simple idea. Okay, we need to link up the startups with their future clients first.
Okay.
And the problem that we hit almost immediately is that these guys, the startups and corporates, kind of mid-size and up, they speak different languages. They have nothing in common except that the product can actually be a life-saving in certain examples. But a very typical scenario on our end would be, we have a startup. We know that this startup would resolve a particular issue, let's say to a large a logistics firm in the UK that have thousands and thousands of employees, a quite antiquated system. They can genuinely benefit from change. And then it becomes a runaround. And then it becomes, well, we need to have our procurement involved. We need to have our accounting. What about your legal side of things? What about this? What about that? And the startups simply cannot keep up with the demands which are originated from working with another large kind of traditional-based enterprise. So we very welcome this rise of the innovation departments that almost, their job is to act as an interpreter between the startups and the business on the company side of things, and helping to link those two. And finally enough, this is still such an early days. So it's amazing to see how this industry, how this dialogue is being formed. Different companies are still looking for ways how they can engage with innovation, and some do it better. For others, it's innovation theater. But we think we live in really interesting time, and on Blue Lake side of things, so we are trying very actively to engage with startups and the corporates, in our turn, helping to bridge those differences.
Well, thank you for that. There's something you just said that I'd like you to go a little bit more into, innovation theater, right? So what do you mean by innovation theater?
Well, imagine if you like. So you have a CEO of a large enterprise. They're scared shitless that they're going to be out of business because some Silicon Valley, Israeli, Ukrainian, British startup will just make them obsolete. The CEO then goes to his second in command or some head of R&D and says, well, we need to figure out how to be the next Amazon or whatever. And you do it tomorrow, you know. And then this story happens so many times. And like anything else, building up innovation within the corporate department takes time, takes energy, takes patience, and you may not get it right for the first time. What is far easier to do is to turn it into the best case scenario marketing activity. The worst case scenario is the theater, is where then there is loads of activities, there are demo days, there are startups are invited to pitch in front of the corporates, but then this goes nowhere. Everyone in the industry is aware of this fact, and regretfully, we're still in the middle of these of the theatrics, and they're not going anywhere because of the way the corporate culture is structured. People are too often, for good reason, are more concerned about protecting their little fiefdoms. And this means doing the thing which may be less effective for the company, but safer in the context of the person who is responsible for, in this case, innovation. But this, I guess, applies to many other departments. So next time you see this, like, you know, 50 startups, 20 corporates, 1 hour of pitching, you know, let's make a change happen. You're probably going to get some really good drinks. Maybe, you know, probably now it's going to be online. You'll hear some fun speakers, but unlikely that something will come out of it. Things that do come out of it, things that do happen, that do work, they tend to be much quieter and much more persistent and long-term. So, not to be too gloomy. We see so many great companies that do a really amazing job, that take it really seriously. It's often not glamorous. People don't hear about it, but once you start speaking with them, they're doing the right things, and it's just a pleasure to be part of it.
Gotcha. So it sounds like, I mean, that's part of the process now, right? When you're preparing the startups, right, to understand that, hey, this is kind of, you know, innovation theater, but yeah, it's not completely gloomy, right? You can get things out of it, but more often than not, it's going to be a longer process, and the things that happen will be kind of behind the scenes, so to speak.
I think, like, pretty much, you know, 80% of what we do with startups, it can be summarized for what you just said. It will be a longer process. Just that is enough to help our startups quite significantly. Yes, working with corporates is going to be always longer than you expected, and we spend a lot of time and effort explaining startups and guys, you know, corporates should be doing more when it comes to working with you, but you should be taking steps forward as well. And this means being patient.
Okay, so now with that being said, you know, talking about innovation theater, obviously your approach with startups is important to understand And of course, like you said, it takes time, but I guess that's not really, it's hard to market that, right? You can't put Blue Lake Accelerator longer than you think, right? Like you can't really put that, right?
Man, maybe we should, but you're right. It's not gonna be a popular tagline.
No. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But still, I'm sure you get a lot of requests or a lot of people coming to you asking you about different ways to facilitate growth. So with that being said, since this is Inside Nearshoring, I'd like to get your take on nearshoring in general. I mean, do you get people who ask you, startups who ask a lot about nearshoring, your experience with it, and what you suggest to them when it comes to actually considering nearshoring?
Sure. So I think it would be useful to do a few, define a few terms. We work with, as an accelerator, it's really important for us to be more than just somebody who works with our own startups, and we work really hard on building a wider ecosystem. So we work with early stage Blue Lake startups, and we work with startups externally as well. And when we talk about startups, the range of companies behind the term is vast. So I think when we talk about, you know, two guys and a dog, probably nearshoring is not going to be that relevant to them. But in the UK, an early stage startup is somebody who, you know, it can be a 10, 20 people strong company who received their funding of 5-10 million. And we spend quite a lot of time working with these guys too. Now, it's funny, when it comes to nearshoring, what we hear is sometimes is it would be, well, we don't really want to outsource. You know, we have all those horrible stories. We have no idea what nearshoring is. All we want is some brilliant programmer who can work remotely. We would like to have some flexibility when it comes to the contracts. And we need the guy to be just on the ball and not work towards a defined project, which inevitably will change, but somebody who can be part of the team. But quite frankly, if you know things go south, it's somebody who we can ask. You know, just saying how it is. Gotcha. So it's funny now, I think for whatever reason, the outsourcing and the outstaffing terms, they got a bad rep. You know, maybe it's the LinkedIn messages that we all received, or yeah, it's the bad experiences that people have. But startups, essentially what they're describing is a nearshoring model, mm-hmm, because they don't care about if this person, especially now, if the person sits in the same city, in the same country, or anywhere else. What's more, and it's an important one, we always discourage our startups to go by our staffing route, something I already mentioned. Because a lot of them like on the surface the idea that we can fix our costs. Here is our project. We're going to hand it over to a reputable outsourcing company. We know how much it's going to cost. In my experience, I never ever seen an example where a project remains within the same specs. Yeah. Or within the same cost base, always. So it doesn't really make sense for them to go via an outsourcing route. A team extension, you can call it nearshoring, you can call it outstaffing. But this is a viable model for many of the growing startups. There are a lot of kind of things that people have to be aware of. I'm sure this is something that you've talked about on the previous podcast. It's about with the team selection, with making sure that people have kind of the same attitudes, that they are truly becoming an extension of the team. But done right, these exceptionally powerful that we encourage startups and indeed our corporate partners who are frequently in a very similar position, the guys from the innovation departments, as our startups, they have to implement something rapidly. They have a project where they're not quite sure where it's going, and they find it difficult to find the resources internally. this is a beautiful model. And what I think COVID did is erase those boundaries between mm-hmm. what is really nearshoring, what is really just a team member who happens to sit in a different country. Yeah. Quite frankly, I struggle to tell the difference right now, and maybe it's a good thing. People should be too hang up on the terms and should be focused on the results. And this is a viable model if used carefully. Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. It works. Well, you definitely want to ensure that things are moving forward, right? So when you say focusing on the results, often you say, well, in many cases, if you go with the right type of support, the right type of vendor, you know, the ends can justify the means, right? But I just as you said, I do see that often, yeah, you do need to really go into the details and understand that everything that glitters isn't gold. Right. So that is something that we've had plenty of conversations about, making sure that expectations are where they need to be before you get into something. And I can imagine a lot of what you do at first, especially, is talk about those expectations. Right. Because I can imagine people come to you and say, look, we're going to be the next Amazon, the next Facebook, whatever it is, always those big ones. Right. But I think, or at least from my view, you probably have to humble them a little bit and say, look, that's great and all, but let's look at what you're really going to have to deal with to get to where you think you can be.
This is 100%. And this is especially the case in Ukraine or other emerging markets where with all the upsides, and there are many of them, otherwise we wouldn't be here. One of the main downside is that lack of maturity and lack of experience. And going back to, you know, it takes longer. Yeah. And I think a lot of the startups in the emerging markets and many in the more established countries, they may, you know, they may be addicted to the stories. You know the stories. I'm telling you about it. It's all about, well, I had this idea and overnight it grew into whatever trillion size company. So we do encourage our startups is to set themselves goals, and these goals have to be incremental and they cannot skip them. And there is one of the things we have to fight against and overcome when working with the startups is this desire to just, you know, skip to success. And this applies when working on a particular product, on a model, or frequently when working with IT developers, programmers internally or remotely. Again, I don't think there is much difference. There is, Well, this is our vision. You guys just get there. And when it comes to things like budgeting, we always encourage our startups to figure out, okay, not the worst case scenario, but there will be a fuck up, there will be a change, there will be unexpected circumstances that you have to working with nearshoring partners or internally. Again, I don't see a difference. There has to be a clarity, there has to be a relationship there that helps to achieve that end goal. It's a very similar thing when you work with your R&D guys internally, or certain same tensions. If you have clearly defined steps, if you haven't accounted for inevitable missteps, there will be tension, there will be unhappiness. Yeah. On the other hand, if there is a mature, kind of a steady, mature approach, you can do wonders working with the partners. You can then become a true extension of your team.
I see a lot of, and that's people looking to skip steps, right? And I think, I mean, obviously that's probably a thing in life, right? People wanting to skip steps and they hear the success stories. But at the end of the day, you know, I think when you hear about a unicorn or something like that, no one ever hears about the five companies that failed, before they founded that unicorn, right? Or the rejections they received. So we read these stories, and I think people look at it as, oh, well, now that I see what they did, I can just improve on their process and just skip from one step to the next. So in terms, I can see how that could be very relevant in terms of, you know, the work you're doing with companies and early stage startups, that mentorship. And of course, even for nearshoring, right? You can't skip the step of having someone involved or having someone understand what you're really trying to accomplish. Otherwise, you're just dealing with, you know, an hourly freelancer of some sort.
Yeah, that's very true. And this, it's been a real challenge for us to try to identify startups that are mature enough and yet, you know, they still need some support. So one of the things, just as an example, we see a lot of startups that have non-technical founders, but they're developing kind of a deep tech, or they're hoping to develop a deep tech technology. And to be honest, we skip those because we find it, it's just very difficult to explain just this thing that you mentioned, is that you cannot just, this is what I want to achieve and I pay money and you know, somebody will figure out it for me. That's one of the ways. I have to also, you know, I don't want it to all to be to doom and gloom. We do deal with a lot of repeat founders, with a lot of guys who have been knocked down and then they got up. And we find that more often than not, the startups that we work with, they have the appreciation of the process.
Yeah.
And then those that work with the nearshoring partners, again, internally or externally, it just becomes a dialogue. It moves away from the battle. It moves away from the kind of the stress of, you know, I wanted A and you haven't delivered it. Why haven't you delivered it? More towards, okay, this is how we evolve together. And it's a beautiful thing to behold, to be honest. That's how, like, okay, this is why we are doing what we are doing.
Now, see, now that's a much better catchphrase. Like, you know, Blue Lake Accelerator, let's evolve together. You know, or you know, so some, you know, in which I think kind of, you know, it works, right? I think a lot of this really comes down to that. I think when you are bridging gaps, whether it's through say nearshoring, whether it's through, you know, being an accelerator and being a mentor and teaching, basically, it does seem to be the ones who are successful are those that embrace doing something together, right? The ones who are not saying, this is just mine, you know, my precious, you know, they don't understand. I'm the only one that gets it. You know, those, I believe, tend to have a lot more difficulties when it comes to even selling what they want to do and getting people to join them.
You're right. But there is a reason for it. It's difficult. Let's not kid ourselves.
Yeah.
It's always easier to try to force your vision and then assume that everyone around you is an idiot who doesn't buy it, rather than finding ways, and this applies to everything, be it your team, your co-founders, your clients, or your developing partners. And this is why, regretfully, still most startups fail. One of the reasons is that they implode from within. It's one of the things that we see time and time again. Because I have a vision, and you know, I read the book, the Jobs, you know, and then I'm gonna be just like Steve and fuck you all, and I'm just gonna get there. Well, you know, Steve Jobs had to do quite a few compromises as well along the way to achieve what he has achieved. So there is a reason. I don't want to be too hard on the guys that fail to find that compromise. It's a skill, and sometimes it just takes time to develop it. Yeah. But once you do, it's a powerful tool indeed.
Gotcha. Well, and it's also something, like you said, that comes in time. So there are plenty of maybe 20, 21-year-olds that have amazing ideas, but they haven't figured out how to compromise yet.
That's so true. So when we started in Ukraine, our first cohort was, and you know, again, we are learning as well as an accelerator, yeah. I'll be honest. Our first cohort was predominantly made up from the bright students or people who have just graduated. Mm-hmm. And there were maybe 2-3 startups that consisted of kind of more mature entrepreneurs that were further down the line in their career.
Yeah.
We believe that, you know, we have those amazing startups made up from founders, or those students that, you know, they have burning eyes and great ideas.
Yeah.
But the startups that are most successful, they were the guys who are headed by the small level headed, more experienced founders.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much most, if not all the kind of the student founders in Ukraine we had in our early cohorts, they kind of burned out really quickly once they faced those adversaries, once they started, you know, hitting those walls. There was like a big bang and flash, and then as well, you know, I'm just gonna do something. This obviously hasn't worked. While the guys with the experience, you could see how, okay, here's the wall, you know, let me try this way, that way, let me figure it out, let me think on it.
Yeah.
So you're right, it's experience. And this is one of the reasons, you know, why US startup scene is so powerful, because there is little stigma attached to failure. It's people are, not okay. I don't want to make light of it.
Yeah.
But it's not the end of the universe. It's not end of your life if you failed first time or second time as an entrepreneur. There is a third time or fourth time. So, regretfully, in Ukraine and in Europe as well, there is far less tolerance towards failure, and we're certainly trying to address this within our scope of Blue Lake.
Okay. Well, and that's cool, and that's interesting, because when you talk about the failure aspect of it, right, as in saying, yeah, sometimes you're going to fail, it's very interesting how you say, well, okay, in the U.S. it's a bit different mentality as opposed to, say, Western Europe, Eastern Europe, Ukraine in general. Now, with that being said, now that you're, you know, you're Blue Lake Accelerator, what are your plans for the future? Are you looking at Europe primarily now? And then are you going to maybe jump across the pond there and do things in the U.S.? Or, you know, how do you see things progressing with Blue Lake Accelerator and your goals moving forward with that?
We have a pretty ambitious goal at Blue Lake, is to change the way the early stage VC investments are done. We believe that right now we are at the odd times where the model is changing, just as whatever it is 20 odd years back when venture capital, at least in its modern form, started to bloom in Silicon Valley and elsewhere. I think we are now at the precipice when the model is ready and it's ripe for change once again. There are a couple of main themes that we are basing Blue Lake's mission, you know, for lack of a less pretentious term. First one is great startups, great ideas, great founders. Investor has to venture outside of his or her comfort zone. And first of all, this means geographically. Mm. I can't say how many times we see this in London, where I am based, but in other tech hubs as well, there is almost this kind of snobbish attitude of, well, I am a VC and it's up to a startup to join me. Right, but that's not exactly how it should work. If you're looking for gold, for real gold, you shouldn't really leave it to chance, and you should be ready to venture outside. It's not easy, there are a lot of challenges, but we think this is the way forward. But this brings us to the next question is, when you venture outside, especially in the emerging markets where we see so many talented engineers are now translating and transferring into amazing startups that offer, quite frankly, a really great value for investors. These guys have very specific challenges. And these challenges need to be addressed. And funnily enough, for those who monitor the early stage space, investment space, we can see there is erosion between startup accelerator and early stage investment fund. Pretty much any website or any investment, partner in an early stage investment fund that you talk to, they all address the issue that one way or another, they're supporting their startups. It's not just the case of here's the money and go and be great. The value of support is really often is actually more important than the funds themselves. So there is this element of support that is being recognized and being incredibly important at those early stages, and doubly or trebly so when it comes to the emerging markets, when it comes to the areas where VCs don't usually venture, if I forgive me for the pun. So this is the second part where we address in the Blue Lake Accelerator via our program. And finally, the third, you know, turtle on which our vision is that those programs have to be tailor-made for each of the startups. When the accelerator model started, it's traditional to ascribe it to Y Combinator and shortly to Techstars. And up to this day, it tends to be pretty rigid for most part. There are loads of variations, but more or less you have your cohort. Then it's like a mini MBA for the founders with the fundraising element quite predominantly thrown in. But really, is this the right way of doing it? Because you have the founders, they're not children, especially as we talked earlier on. These guys who have their own life experiences, and some of them are probably subject matter experts, and they have to, you know, and often sit through those acceleration programs, listen to people who are quite frankly less experienced than them in that particular subject. So our approach is we work with startups to figure out what support they need, and then focus just on those aspects. The main challenge here is scalability, but without taking too much time right now, we have addressed that issue via our fairly unique approach to that particular quite significant problem that may arise. So yes, to recap, is our approach is different. We go out there and we actively look for those, you know, hidden gems. We support them, and our support is individual. It's not a cookie cutter, large class, and just, you know, power away through this program. Gotcha. It has to be individually addressing your issues. So this is where we come in, and right now we are raising funds for our new VC fund that will be supporting the Blue Lake Accelerator program. So hopefully we are going to go live with a new fund in the coming couple of months. So we want to be up by end of October, mid-November. Okay. But this timeline may shift as, you know, the world is rather unpredictable these days. Well,
exactly. I mean, everything's shifting nowadays. So you have to be flexible with it. I get that. And, yes. You know, it's a very interesting take where basically you're saying that, well, VC, venture capital, you know, needs to venture out of their comfort zone if they want to actually make down investments.
Yes.
So there we go, right? So
absolutely. That's mind blown.
Yeah, right? It's like you can't just wait.
Yeah. No, and it's, you know, if you look, once you start digging through it, and I can talk about, you know, numbers all day long, but VC returns are too often, how can we put it politely, fairly modest. And there are a lot of challenges there. You know, I don't want to minimize the challenges that this model entails. But when I see venture capital firms, they're quite actually proud of the fact you know, that they don't put much effort into scouting, that they, you know, they rely on the startups just to them or bumping into them in some kind of, you know, fancy shindigs somewhere, you know, in California or London or Berlin. Well, you'll meet some great guys, but it's going to be the same faces, not going to be particularly cheap, and you're missing out on all those amazing opportunities out there. But it's a pain in the ass, so I get it. It's comfy just to sit in a funky office somewhere, middle of London, and you know, just come hither, and I will select one of you. Our approach is a little bit different.
Exactly, and you know, I guess part of that, and it's good that we bring that up, because it adds to kind of the, you know, when we started talking about innovation theater, right? So I guess you look at it and say a lot of VCs, well, I don't want to say a lot, but you do get a number, I suppose, that are more into the theater of it, to having something to say, hey, we're a VC. It's more marketing than actually working for the startup.
Well, it's like so many other institutions, especially when it comes to larger VCs, the model has calcified. And there is an internal bureaucracy, and there are internal politics and mind games. Limited partners who VCs are reporting to, and it all sometimes becomes more important, it becomes more significant about the shape of things rather than substance. And it's up to organizations such as ours, you know, just as VCs. A while back, they came in and, you know, they were not happy with the way private equity guys, who, you know, were more traditional then and less flexible. Right now, it's, you know, it's up to the new guys, new funds, new fund managers to come in and to shake things up. And, you know, that's what we are all about.
Okay. And you know, I want to touch on one thing that you have on your website, actually, there, and I'm going to quote you. So I'm going to look aside to quote you. You wrote that now more than ever, the talent is internationally based, not restricted to one city, country, or culture. And, you know, it seems as though that's something that ties directly into, you know, what we see, say, with nearshoring. But I'd love for you to go just a tiny bit into that, because we've touched on it a bit already. But, you know, you're thinking in regards to that it's not restricted to one city, one country, and most importantly, culture, because we kind of touched on that a little bit as well. But the cultural aspect of things, how important is that when it comes to, say, you know, tech, for example?
Yes, we wrote that statement before the COVID. Yeah. And if anything, the current state of affairs has, you know, put this idea on steroids. Looking at the tech scene as a whole, up to fairly recently, there was an obsession about moving towards a tech center, Silicon Valley, or your Berlins, your Londons, the usual suspects. And it always was kind of intertwined with an idea of that success. To be successful, I have to be physically present, you know, in that particular. The problem with that approach is, for financial reasons of of a background, for visa issues, something as mundane as that, the flow of startups that actually can make that transition is pretty small, and it has nothing to do with the talent or with the end product, with an idea, with a startup. Sometimes it comes down to the dumb luck. You know, have I got the money to make the relocation? Do I have the necessary papers to get the appropriate visa in EU, in the UK, in the US? And we have all those guys left out in the cold. At least this used to be the case. There is no logical reasons why they should be so. And as we see, as the market itself moves towards being fairly agnostic. You know, it used to be the case of you can't go wrong, you know, you can't get fired for buying an IBM. Mm. People are now far more open towards, you know, I want an idea, I want a solution that actually solves my problem. And if you are a startup and if you're based in India, in Ukraine, in Israel, fine, power you. There is a bit of a, you know, a meritocracy that is emerging when it comes to where you actually base. You know, your offices don't have to be squeezed in the square mile in London. So this used to be the case before COVID, but let's not kid ourselves. The power of interaction is still a significant thing. Yes. And there was still the kind of, you know, the handshake approach that, you know, the a startup had to do with a potential client or with an investor. I think COVID has just broken that remaining strand and tore it to shreds. Yeah. We've done a couple of investments throughout the quarantine period, and we never seen those startups. And we know many, many other investors that are doing just that. Mm-hmm. People are working remotely, and you know, we're coming to the era where there will be people hired right now who haven't seen their colleague physically, and are not likely to see them for many months, or God knows, or maybe ever.
Yeah.
And that's the new norm. So right now, the physical location is no longer being restricted to, you know, you have to be based just across road across me.
Yeah.
What it, and just latest trends have also been very, very significant in the area of the culture, something that you touched on, and I think it's super important. Right now, a startup in China, anyway, has access to the same resources, you know, same Harvard Business School, same Y Combinator materials, same research articles, online conferences as their peers. So if you could argue, and you could argue quite successfully, that, well, if you're not based locally, you have no chance because you're just not going to understand the culture, you're not going to get the environment.
Yeah.
Still an important factor. You know, if you want to sell in New York, it's good idea to be based in New York. But right now, is it a killer? Probably no.
Yeah.
And the way the trajectory where this is going, I think every day is going to be less and less important where you're from, what your background, and more important about the result. And you know, finally, we see a trend now in the US leading the way, but global, about people becoming more and more aware about equality when it comes to ethnicity, when it comes to gender, when it comes to other things. We are not out of the woods yet.
Yeah.
And this is a real issue. But again, the trend, and you know, let's look at the trends, it seems to be, you know, long term the right one. You're not gonna get involved in the politics and the right and wrongs, but it's good to see that, you know, we can all agree that it's about the content of the character rather than anything else. And it seems like people are taking it seriously. So everything, when it combines, all right, does it really matter, you know, if a startup was registered in the US or their office is based whenever? Yeah. Or it matters what the guys produce. And I think, like ourselves, like many other VCs, we're becoming more and more comfortable with that idea that it matters little. And many of my friends and colleagues, you know, they just found out that they're going to be working remotely for at least a year to come.
Yeah.
So I'm talking about the guys in the UK. Does it now, again, you know, coming to the issue which we talked earlier about the nearshoring and the IT development? Again, does it, in my mind, that border is becoming very, very thin. What is the difference really between nearshoring and people working with you and they happen to be registered on paper in a, you know, different structure, you know, they have a different arrangement with the HR. I think it used to be important. You know, people used to be quite proud of the headcount. Mm-hmm. No longer. And I think these are the good trends in anything. They continue to accelerate. And again, yeah, you know, something good is coming out of this, you know, pretty horrendous situation. Yeah. And this kind of equality and, you know, being agnostic when it comes to country, area, region, and just focusing on the results, be it startups or service providers, you know, them, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I guess now we look at it and say, hey, if it works, it works, right? And that's the important thing, right? Now I think what's going to happen is it's basically finding new ways to make connections, knowing that, like you said, you may not meet someone in person for quite some time. And when you do, I expect now to have a lot more conversations with people saying, hey, you're taller than I thought you were, or, you know, something like that, because you don't get to meet in person. So we do see, and I've seen some changes in that, you know, and it's interesting, right? I think we're in for some interesting times regardless. And it seems as though you see it from one point of view, and you get to see it from, you know, not only as an accelerator, but the people that you mentor, I would assume they come to you with the same issues. So with that being said, just to get one more thing in, because I know I have to let you go soon, two things, right? So one would be, as a question, one is, we've talked about culture, right? We've talked about the nature of working remotely. If a startup, early stage, you know, comes to you and they want to know more about tech, what would you say is the most important step for them to ensure that they're going to be able to meet those tech needs or have consistent growth in terms of development?
What can startups do to ensure their growth and development, if I heard you correctly?
Yes, especially when it comes to technology.
I think it's a twofold solution, if I can say so. There isn't really a solution, but at least a twofold approach that can maximize their chances of success. And this addresses the very basic needs. It's the client and the product. And if you focus on those, you can't go wrong. Mm-hmm. When it comes to clients, we would encourage the startups to start developing those relationships from the word go, even before your product is ready. Don't wait for the magic moment when all things are good and you are ready to go. Start early, start building those human contacts, and be quite honest. You know, hey guys, we're not quite there yet, but we would like you to be aware of us. And if you don't mind, we'll keep you updated with our progress in development. Great. That works like magic. About too few startups utilize that. Too many founders are waiting just for the right moment to then, you know, explode into the market, and then, you know, there's a cold shower waiting for them there.
Yeah.
But that's something easy and something that can be done. When it comes to technology, this is the core. And we see a lot of startups. I don't want to, you know, throw too much at them. It's understandable. They get fixated on one thing. You know, it can be often it's fundraising or solving a, you know, particularly difficult issue that can, you know, it can be a team issue or whatever. It all comes down to product and the underpinning technology, underpinning tech. In the ideal scenario, you know, you should have your co-founders that are, you know, they have tech background, they have the relevant skills, the relevant knowledge, and they're pouring their heart and soul into your product day in, day out. And you know, this is it. There is no magic. You need to be ready to scale things up. And this is what we see quite often where startups, they stumble, is when the product finds the initial success, they're not ready to scale things up, they're not ready to move forward. And this leads to, you know, well, we've done all the hard work, we have the clients who are interested in what we are doing, but they actually require some sort of additional tech support and we don't have the right people. And then this becomes, you know, the race to for recruitment. And we see so many times, you know, there are startups feverishly advertising, you know, we need some people urgently to join our team yesterday. This is not super effective either. So they need to be a roadmap. As you know, it's tricky, but for your product development and where you go when your product finds success. And if it's the team expansion, start planning it ahead. It's pretty damn difficult to find the right people. Yeah. If you're planning to work with external partners, great. Start building those relationships just with your customers. Start building them early. Find the guys that you know, aligned with you, not only skills-wise, but you know, philosophy-wise. It sounds a little bit esoteric, but I can't put it any better than that. So you know you have that support when the time comes. So I think if a startup focuses on those two things, it's
going to
be in a good place.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, you know, I started by saying we'd have two questions, but I think you've answered, you know, everything that I would have asked in the second question, you know, so thank you for that. And, you know, I think at this point, you know, I know you have to get going, but I do want to thank you for taking the time. And I know it's not easy. I know you got a lot going on, so I appreciate that. And before we go, I usually say, well, is there anything that I didn't ask that I should have, right? You know, what are you up to? Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, I think we've been pretty thorough. I think we are right now at the times where they're challenging, but in a year or two, we're going to be looking back and thinking that this was the time of opportunity. I genuinely do think so. And I would encourage startups, corporates, innovation departments to see these as this is the time now to take actions, to plan ahead, rather than waiting for the things to, you know, to normalize. The time is now. And this is the opportunity either to be taken or to be missed. And you know, let's make the most of what is a pretty tough situation.
Great. I completely agree. And I say, yeah, let's end it on that. You know, the time is now. So anyone that's interested in you know, starting a company or building or growing, anyone that's interested in, you know, tech support or reaching out and crossing borders, you know, this is the best time to do it. So the time is now. And I guess now it's time for us to say goodbye. So I guess no worries. I appreciate the time and I look forward to us catching up in person, you know, face to face one of these days and continuing the conversation. Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it.
Sounds like a plan. Have a great day. Cheers.
All right. See ya.